Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Here at Guitar Nerds, we're big fans of iZotope software and their impressive range of plugins. And you, dear listener, get 10% off all iZotope plugins at iZotope.com with discount code NERDS10. Every Guitar Nerds podcast for well over 5 of its 10 years has been edited, polished, and repaired using iZotope's wonderful range of tools. From their Nectar suite to EQ, compress, and lightly add reverb to give the impression that Matt and I are in the same room, to the RX repair suite to deal with pops, clicks, and background noise. In fact, every sound sample that you hear on our podcast is mastered using iZotope's Ozone Mastering Suite, and I can even compare audio EQ and levels to other similar released material using iZotope's Tonal Recall. It's all very good, and believe it or not, there are a bunch of free plugins that you can try. A vinyl simulator for added character, the Ozone Imager for help visualizing your stereo mix, and a vocal doubler for added richness and depth to your vocals. Pretty neat. Check it all out at iZotope.com.
So, Matt, I heard about this doctor who's going around, amputating people's limbs and replacing them with animal parts. If I find him, I'll kill him with my bare hands.
Oh, Joe.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Matt Knight.
Good evening, Mr. Joe.
Good evening, Mr. Matt. Welcome. Welcome back. You're back from France. You were away for work in France, and you didn't get to go to the Guitar Street in Paris. It's so disappointing.
To the Guitar Street in Paris, which I can never remember its name. I spent 3 days in France and saw very little of actual France. I have nothing exciting to report guitar-wise about France. although I did go to a bar, we went for lunch it was kind of like these offices were like on an industrial estate, and they had a restaurant that also had a motorcycle custom shop in it, a tattooist, a barber,
nice,
and then a mini venue, all within the restaurant. And I was just like, wow. And then and everyone that worked there basically had a massive, perfectly manicured beard.
Did you get your beard manicured at all?
I didn't have time. It would have been great to just wheel in on a motorcycle, get the beard trimmed, couple of new tattoos, zoom out with a burger in my mouth. It didn't happen that way, unfortunately.
Unfortunate. But you're back with us now, which is very important. And I'll tell you what, Matt, season 4 is going really well so far.
Season 4, episode 4. Episode 4. The middle of the album. Still at the beginning of the album.
It's very much at the beginning of the album. There's something like 40, it works out about 48 episodes a series, something like that. Wow. When you take out Gear of the Years and things like that, because obviously, you know, they take up the last couple of weeks of the year, and we always miss the first week of the year as well. But they're
48 joyous episodes with me and you talking absolute guff.
Exactly. Well, actually, next week it's not me and you, is it, Matt? You're off on a holiday,
I'm going to Norway on a cruise, so I could be no further away from a music shop.
Are you going to find any Norwegian? Oh, is it just you stay on a boat the whole time?
I think it's basically we're on a boat for 2 whole days and then we dock for 3 days in 3 different areas. But one of the places that we go is literally just like the middle of nowhere.
Right.
I doubt it. But if I do find anything, I will let you know. But Norway.
I don't know anything about the Norwegian guitar scene.
Kind of expensive, Norway.
Is it?
Yeah.
Stayed out of the EU, didn't it?
Crazy tax. Yeah. You don't want to drink alcohol in Norway. Let's put it that way.
Right.
Last time I went to Norway, which was in 2019, one bottle of beer at this one place we went to was £27.
Wow.
I think it's because, they tax alcohol very heavily over there.
I see.
But yeah, no, it's a cool place. It's a nice place. Don't know much about the music scene, but I like Norway.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. Well, yes, that'd be great. Yeah, next week when you're away, it's going to be me and Philip Carter from 40 Watt Podcast. Because he was so great when we had him on for the Gear of the Year with Blake this year, I thought I'd bring him back. He's actually coming back for a couple of episodes over the next month, nice. I think, as well. So
the 40 Watt Nerds.
The
40 Watt Nerds.
The 40 Watt Nerds, indeed. So, dear listener, you have that to look forward to next week. But yeah, we are doing well in the old charts at the moment, Matt. We're 15th in Great Britain in the hobbies category on Apple Podcasts.
Who's ahead of us? Do you know?
I'm just looking at the stats that I get sent. This our placement. So in the US in hobbies we're 28th, which is up 3 places week on week, and in the UK we are 15th, which is up 9 places week on week.
To self-indulge for a small moment, that is, when you think how many podcasts there actually are and how many podcasts I get advertised on other podcasts I listen to, I'd say that's pretty damn impressive, considering like more popular hobbies include fishing and Pokemon.
Knitting, gardening.
Gardening
Dungeons
as well.
And Dragons.
Dungeons and Dragons, yeah. So for 15th. 28th in America. I mean, there's 300 people in America. How many people listen to podcasts there? I'm thoroughly impressed. Well, thank you very much to everyone who listens and continues to listen and support us. It's very much appreciated. Yeah.
But Canada, you can sod off. We're down 52 places in Canada. 107th in the hobbies category over there.
God, so. How can they have 106 more hobbies than us? I don't understand. They've got moose.
Wow, Matthew. Yeah, who knows? But yes.
Generalisation, but damn you, Canada.
Yeah, exactly. But yes, yeah, it's been a good week for me anyway, Matt. I got a new guitar. I got a Daisy Rock, one of their flower guitars.
Should we explain a little bit about what Daisy Rock is in case anyone doesn't know what Daisy Rock actually is?
Yes, go on, Matt. You explain. Tell the people about Daisy Rock, the company.
Daisy Rock Girl Guitars is what they put on their website. The 20th anniversary of Daisy Rock. I'm guessing this is recent. I mean, it's a very pixelated image. But Daisy Rock is effectively a brand of electric guitars that are geared towards... what's the best way to put this? Because early on, they were like very much like 90s girl power, I guess. Like late 90s, early 2000s girl power.
Heart-shaped or flower-shaped. They did some Les Paul-style things, but they would be like glitter finishes and stuff like that. So it wasn't, it always sounds so accidentally sexist, doesn't it, to say that a flower-shaped guitar is, aimed at girls. Yeah, but they were trying to make them look like kids' toys for girls. And I think the idea of the company, whilst maybe misguided in sort of with a modern head on, I think the idea was to try and get young women playing guitar, young girls playing guitar. Was trying to enhance that area. It's just a bit of a weird
Yeah, I think that's the thing, isn't it? It is a fact that, as they advertise on their website, they've done 40 NAMM shows, 20 years of business, 10,000 magazine interviews, 16 TV interviews, 3 museum inductions, 1 TED Talk, and 500,000 girl guitarists and bassists.
Wow.
But yeah, I didn't realise it had been going quite so long. But I think you're right. The idea in the mission statement, I think, for them, I couldn't say exactly, it's probably always been to make more, you know, women play guitars. You know, yeah. I think that's always the thing.
That's been the gist. And whether or not making a heart-shaped guitar, whether or not that's slightly patronising by modern standards or not, they're very cool guitars. You know, whatever your gender or however you identify, they are cool-looking guitars. They're well-made. I think they're Korean builds. Lacquered necks, which I'm a big fan of. Seymour Duncan design pickups, which are great. Oh, it's just a humbucker in the bridge, so perfect. There's no messing around here. It's just a tone machine.
Mm.
I don't think you even get tone control thinking about that, just volume. That's what you want. My sister had one, actually, one of the flower-shaped ones in pink when we were growing up. I think I sold it years and years ago when she never ended up taking guitar, but I think me and my dad got it for her, you know, when she was very little. And then it's, you know, she hasn't used it, so I think I sold it, you know, probably 15, 20 years ago for not a lot of money. But now, these days, they're actually getting sought after and people are looking for them and purchasing them. They do like butterfly shaped ones as well, hearts and flowers.
It's one of those things where when I started playing guitar about 20 years ago, you'd go, God, you'd never play one of those. You've got to play a Ibanez or whatever. Uh-huh. And then people of a similar generation and age go, the same people going, yeah, I'm going to buy a Hello Kitty and put an EMG in it,
yeah,
and tune it down to C. The same people now are going, yeah, I'll buy a flower-shaped Daisy Rock and put an EMG on it and tune it down to C.
Well, that's why I think they were going up in value so much. I was seeing them go for like £500 plus. But the great thing, actually, with a product like this is you've got an awful lot of mums and dads. You've got an awful lot of parents who have got guitars that maybe they tried out with their kids years ago that didn't take, and they've been sitting around gathering dust, and they don't know anything about guitar. They bought it from a shop because it was shaped like a butterfly or whatever. They don't know what they've got. They don't know if it works. They don't have an amplifier to find out if it works. And so they bung it up for like £150. And that's what I was looking for. The guitars that were a deal. In fact, the one that I bought, the lovely woman selling it, I was read the description from my partner, Emma, before I saw the guitar. And in the description, she'd said that the one of the tuning knobs is missing, and I was like, oh, it's missing a tuner. That's annoying, because, you know, difficult to get the exact same one, but I wonder if it's something where I can get a part. I'm sure it's fixable. And I had a look at the picture, and it wasn't the tuning, it was the volume control. It was just missing the button. That's what she was calling it, a tuning knob. So that, so, you know, she was like, well, £120 because I can't find the tuning control, or, you know, whatever. So it wasn't actually for me. I was buying it for for Emma's cousin Zoe's daughter Penelope, who's 9 or something, and really wants to take up guitar. She's big into, I think she plays something else, so it's hopefully not going to be lost on her. She's sure. Really excited about it. So
are you sure she doesn't want a true historic Les Paul?
Yeah, I'll see if I can talk him into that. But
it's about £7,000. You'll be all right. Perfect beginner.
Yeah. Exactly. But yeah, so I basically got that for them because I was able to get it at such a price. And I was like, well, maybe it needs a little work, even if it needs some electric sorted, that's probably going to be fine. As it turns out, a little contact cleaner sorted it all out. It obviously needed a setup. It had been sitting around idle for years, so it needed a new set of strings. And the strings threw me at first when I was trying to tune it, and it wasn't working. And I realized that it's a 3-a-side headstock, and they put the strings on the same way on every string.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. So it tuned the wrong way. Yeah,
when you went
down
onto the high three, yeah. Which got me for a second. I was like, what is happening here? Oh, that's what it is. But it's great. I'm gonna fix it up for them, make it into a great little guitar. I think they're really cool.
Nice. Well, here's a bit of interesting facts for you based on Wikipedia research I've done right now. So Tish Kirovolo is the owner and founder of Daisy Rock Girl Guitars, that the official brand is Daisy Rock Girl Guitars.
Isn't she something to do with Schecter?
Yes. I didn't know this. So she developed the design, which her daughter drew when she was 1.5 years old, and took it to her husband, Michael Kirovolo, who was the president of Schecter Guitars. Right. Yeah. And Schecter had grown under Michael's leadership from its original roots as a small company in the 70s and 80s to a major guitar manufacturer. So they debuted that guitar in November 2000. And then Courtney Love saw
it.
It's
the height of girl power.
Yeah, Courtney Love saw it, signed it, approved it, thought it was great. And then they added that guitar into the NAMM Museum of Making Music, along with the original drawing that her daughter had done. But they're a subsidiary of KMC Music. I'd heard who they were.
KMC are a distributor in America.
But yeah, interestingly, in 2008, Cayman Corporation sold Cayman Music Corporation to Fender for $117
million.
Oh. But they make Ampeg, Daisy Rock, Hamer, Remo, Randall, and Washburn.
Right.
But they are also now a subsidiary of Exertus Jam. So
there you go.
I don't know.
Exciting stuff.
Very exciting, boring business stuff. But yeah, Daisy Rock Guitars. No, they were the sort of guitar that you always saw in the sort of mid-tier music shop. Yeah. Along with
Cubatalk.
Court.
Yes, they did. Yeah, very much around that sort of time with those sorts of guitars.
But a golden age in some ways of guitar shops. So now I have moved back to my hometown temporarily of Ipswich in Suffolk. There are two music shops remaining. One is Music Room. No, it's not a music room. Music something. Music right. store. Music. I'm sure it's called Music Room, but it's not the
music it's not chain the music of music room. Right.
And that's been there since I started playing guitar, and still looks very much the same, which is great. I like it. They just don't have the Dan. That's where I first saw the Dan Electro food pedals. I remember that quite clearly. And then down the road is Project Rocket Music.
Project Rocket Music
is a store that effectively has no displays, but everything is piled from floor to ceiling of just stuff. And I'm like, you don't see enough of those music shops anymore where it's chaos and you never know what you're going to find. So in there, they had some 1970s Morley Pro Flangers and Phasers. So they're the big old metal foot pedal ones.
What, like new old stock?
No, I think they're old, but they look pretty new. They probably maybe have been there sometime.
Yeah.
The most expensive guitar they had was a 5-string Music Man bass. but they also had a high watt custom 20 in there. They had a bunch of old pedals. I'm just you don't see enough of those shops that just very old school, but you can find a few gems in there.
Yeah, I bet.
But they're the kind of place that you would find Daisy Rock.
Yes, indeed.
But yeah, I'm sure it'll be a great guitar once you've cleaned it up.
I really am impressed with the quality. Like I say, like the neck feels great. It's a lovely sort of light glossed lacquer like you would get on the early 2000s American standard Fenders. You know, Duncan design humbucker in the bridge. You can't go wrong with this. Rosewood neck, everything's great. So we'll see. We'll see. I've sorted out the electrics and popped a new set of strings on it. I've left it sitting for a couple of days, and then I'll set it up really properly, get it on the bench again. And I think it's going to be great. I'll probably record some stuff with it. But
absolutely should. And then we'll do a tone test between the true historic and the Daisy Rock.
That's it. That's what we're getting next week, everyone. A tone test between a £6,000 Gibson and a £120 Daisy Rock.
Nice. I look forward to it.
Yeah. Anyway, actually, on the subject of guitars, which this is a podcast of, me searching for Telecasters. Everyone has been very, very helpful on the group, on the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook. Dear listeners, if you're not on that, join it. The Guitar Nerds group on Facebook. Lots of discussion. And I've had lots of people suggesting great Telecaster options. Because before I was like, I need an all-rounder. I got lots of different suggestions for that. I've kind of boiled it down to the fact that what I want is a Tele. I don't have a Tele in my life at the moment. I really want one. So people have been suggesting options for that. Mark Kanapke, I think I got your name right this time, Mark. I mispronounced it drastically last time. He'd suggested GNL, which is a great option for getting a good all-rounder because it will be kind of modern in spec, but still getting something essentially designed by Leo Fender. They're great prices as well. G&L are a good company. Corey MacArthur suggested pin-up guitars. You ever checked out pin-up guitars, Matt?
No, I have not.
No.
Do I have pin-ups on them?
Yeah, it's pin-up custom. So, you know, they do little one-off builds, but they're very much, it's all that gorgeous aging and lacquer checking, exactly the sort of thing that I'm interested in. And they're all kind of reasonable prices, about $2,500. I know that's very expensive, dear listener. I mean, but it's less than the $4,000 that it costs for a custom shop Fender these days. Eric Scott had suggested Lucky Dog. We had Henrik Linder suggested Green Guitars, a European brand. Tim Natrajan, I have butchered your name there, Tim, owns a Kaufman, and he'd shared his picture of his lovely Kaufman Telecaster in a gorgeous sort of mid-metallic grey with a black plate. It was absolutely lovely. And Kaufman really high on my list. I actually spoke to the Kaufman guys this week. Grey guitars. John Hutton had suggested grey guitars, which I think you, Matt,
talked about that briefly, didn't we?
We did. Chris Andrew suggested Gordon Smith, which they actually do, a Tele for $999 that you can custom spec yourself.
Wow.
It's very, very good. The one that really stuck out to me out of the lot, actually, because I really thought I was Kaufman was kind of the one. I was really, really impressed with Kaufman. And then Jason Wharton on the group suggested Oswald guitars.
Another, I have heard of those.
Yeah. Another European builder. And they do the OT and the OS, so Oswald Tele and Oswald Strat, I guess.
Original.
Yeah. but the guitars themselves look absolutely lovely. And I was looking at a relic aged, like, you know, lacquer checking, nitro finished, butterscotch 52 style Tele, €1,795 in euros. That is an incredibly reasonable price.
I'm trying to have a look. Very, very good. They've got in stock. Right, I'm trying to see what they've got in stock right now. Where are these? Are they? No, I think these are Danish. Might be wrong. I might be confused.
I'll look on their about page and find out right now.
but yeah, don't seem like crazy price. 1795, 895. 1895, sorry, for a couple of the guitars on their website. Yeah, cool. I mean, it's just so much cool stuff out there.
Yeah.
From individual, you know, small manufacturers that can basically make what you want.
Yeah, there's a lot of options. So I don't know. I don't know exactly where I've landed. The price on the Oswalds is absolutely insane. So I've thought about those a lot. But then another thing that I keep coming back to is maybe I should be just building something. Because also when it comes to Fender style things, it's very easy to pick up a neck, a body, and then choose your own electrics and choose your own pickups. Like James's Home of Tone is fantastic as a one-stop shop for getting all the bits and bobs you need to upgrade your guitar. That's, you know, perfect for that. So all I really need to find is a body and a neck. So I've started looking around also at high quality Relic bodies that you can purchase. And I can't remember, someone didn't save who it was, but someone suggested Golden Era Guitars, which is Golden Era, one word, -guitars.co.uk. So there are little UK ones. See, half of the problem with the Relic bodies is an awful lot of these shops, as amazing as they are across the pond. They are US based. And it means that if I'm paying sort of, you know, 380, 400, 450 plus for a body, and then paying another 20% to get it across the border over here, all of a sudden,
I've paid so expensive.
I've basically paid for a, you know, a Mexican 60s, you know, or a Mexican 50s Ventura Telecaster just getting the body from those shops. So I was kind of trying to find it somewhere a bit local, maybe even somewhere I could visit and, you know, meet the people that do it. And that would be nice as well. And I really like these Golden Era guitar options. Looks, they are expensive in comparison to some others. I often see finished bodies going for around 400 quid, like 380, 400. These are kind of can be 525, 480, 475, 480, just the few that I'm looking at their, on their page at the moment. But the relicking looks fantastic.
It's so tricky, like buying a Bitzer. I guess the thing is we've always said, don't buy a Bitzer if you ever think you're going to sell it, because it's never worth any money. No. But you're right, you know, you do get to start from fresh, you know, and you get to pick the body, you get to pick the relicking. There was a company in the UK that was doing a lot of that, and not Warmoth, but someone else that was doing, like, you could buy relic bodies and stuff like that. I think the bodies, to me, is the easy part. I think it's finding the neck you want is always is always the hard part, because I think the neck quality can vary massively.
Right.
But I think bodies tend to be a little bit easier to come by. I can't remember the name of the store, though. There was a specific place in the UK that was selling just the bodies.
Well, maybe let's put that out to listeners, sort of UK and EU-based. Sorry, everyone else. I just don't want to pay the import on this one if I buy a Bitzer. If you've got any suggestions, anyone, of Relic bodies that I can purchase on their own that I can then cobble together myself, that would be fantastic. I do really like the Golden Era guitars stuff, but alternate suggestions, very, very welcome. Ideally, Tele body shapes, obviously, but, you know, it'd be fun to just see what's out there.
I just Googled Relic Guitar UK. Scroll to the bottom. Related searches, Relic Strat, affordable Relic guitars, heavy Relic guitar, Relic acoustic. And then it's got some recommended searches in the little bubbles. And we've got Relic Guitar Relic Service near me, Relic Guitar Price, Relic Guitar Parts UK, Relic guitars are for losers.
yes, people hate them, don't they? It's still the biggest bone of contention in this industry.
It's bizarre. Guitars. Yeah,
it is a weird thing to like. I mean, it is weird to like a guitar that's pretend aged, but that, I don't know. I can't tell you what it is, dear listener. If you're not a believer,
it's beyond pretend age, though, isn't it? I think realistically, like, to me, pretend aged, as it were, it's like closet classic or a very, very light relic.
Right.
Like when you get like insane relics, like I think that's more of
that's where it's weird. Are you saying
it's just a paint job? You know?
Maybe. Not, I see what you're saying. I actually like the Closet Classics is what I like because the look I like is that lacquer checking. That's the thing. I'm not really too fussed about pretend wear in positions. That doesn't bother me. But a nice light lacquer checking. And on a telly, I love it when it's just the finish has gone around that upper lower bow on the hard edge of the body. It just looks fantastic. But, you know, I don't need it to be heavy relict for me.
No, I think to me, I've never considered it aging. I've just considered it like a finish choice. I know that sounds silly. That's the same thing in some ways, but just I've not thought, oh, this guitar has ever tried to look old. I've just been like, this is the way they finished that guitar.
Right. Yeah. That's a good point.
But yeah, also though, I'll just point out, I know we've talked about tellies 3 weeks in a row, but we've got to make sure you get one, Joe. someone is listing a Fender FSR Vintera 50s telly in shell pink. And that's got the roasted maple neck. And I must say, that is a cracking looking guitar for the money.
That's a great sounding guitar. How much is that going for?
£715, Mr. Branton.
Oh, that's very good. I think didn't the Shell Pink Vintera have a black scratch plate, which annoyed me with the pink? A pink should always have a mint guard.
It does have a black scratch plate.
I would change that. That's easy enough.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's a good guitar for the money. It's definitely that's very good for the money.
I tell you what, Matt, one of the other things that I was looking at when I was looking at bodies is G&B Guitar and Bass in the UK, which I think is G&B for Guitar and Bass Builds. They actually have their thing called True Tone. I think True Tone Relics they call them, because they sell bodies and necks and they do build
this
to order.
Is who I was thinking of, I think. But I've been on the website before.
See, was it? Yes, they're very good. And they've got a couple of ready assembled models, which obviously have a little markup, but it kind of saves me the work. And there's a True Tone. I've got popped a little link there in our document, Matt, but the True Tone aged Telecaster in butterscotch blonde, essentially a 52 telly, looks very nice, lovely, subtle lacquer checking, 52 spec neck, you know, big baseball bat of a thing, looks very good. £1,200. I could have it here tomorrow. Yeah,
you could. Yes, I think it gets to that point, Joe, where you're like, you just need to play a couple.
Yes, yeah,
probably. And you'll just play one, and you'll go, that's great. And you'll be like, that's the one, and then job done. That's going to be the tricky thing, I think. It's just you're going to be swamped in a world of choice.
Ugh, I know. I need to make a decision and just get a telly because I'm really disliking not having a telly now. The longer it goes on, the worse it's getting for me. So I need to commit and make a decision. Anyway, let's move on from Telecasters because otherwise I'm just going to buy something now because I'll get so annoyed with it. Matt. Your Micronaut is on the way, I believe.
Yes. So after last week, we spoke to Charles, lovely chap, from Silktone. And we were just like, look, we really dig this product. We'd really like to give it a go. And we've struck a deal. He's sending the, by what I can gather, one of the only UK Transformer versions of the amp over to us.
Yes.
For us to kind of plumb into the Guitar Nerds studio.
Gear of the year right there, Matt.
Gear of the year. I mean, that is my solid contender for gear of the year right now. I'm super impressed with the idea of the way that you can run this direct into a DAW. This can be your preamp. This can be what you run your guitars into before you're going into Ableton or Logic and you're running into plugins. This can be your, you know, everything, as it were. And I like the idea of running it into a pedal board and using it as a fuzz pedal. Loads of great options with it. Just, you know, a really nice, unique take on the kind of small amp lunchbox thing.
And it looks fantastic.
It does look very good, but it's sort of sent me on a spiraling path of like other similar amps. Like, you know, we talked about the Greer.
Yeah.
And like how many other small amps are there out there for me? I'm super excited. So hopefully in the next couple of weeks when I come back from holiday, that will be knocking on my door and I'm super excited to actually do some demos with it and just play through a couple of things and maybe slightly different to how you've done the demos, Joe. Maybe I'll do a bit of more of a talky 2 minute roundup talky thing. But I seriously think this is going to be a contender for me for Gear of the Year. Absolutely.
Yes, I think it's going to be hard to top something so interesting, unique, you know, retro, custom shop, and not, you know, not the end of the world money-wise as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to have Charles from Silktone on the podcast after we've demoed it. So if you're in the Facebook group, pop on there any questions you want to ask an amp builder or you want to ask Silktone. And, you know, obviously he's got the fuzz pedal as well as some other bits. So there's lots to talk about, but we're super keen to kind of get what sort of questions you would ask. Because I think before, Jay, when we've done interviews, it's always just sort of been us and...
Yeah,
we've sort of been, you know, riffing on it, as it were, whereas I think we've got a chance to, you know,
get
some valuable
nice
input from the group.
It would be nice to include you more, dear listeners. So do get involved. Let us know anything you'd like to know. We'll take from there. We'll see how it goes. Mm. Matt, talk to me about the Chase Bliss Generation Loss Mark II. You've put this down as a point of discussion in our document. And I was like, oh, is that a new pedal? And of course it isn't. The Mark II has been around for a while.
Super slow, Joe. You're super yes. slow. You know, what do they say? A bad workman blames his tools, and I always blame my tools. and I'm just sort of like, I don't know what it is. I spent a lot of time with my big pedal board out in the kind of new temporary studio space, and the Microcosm is very, very good. Right. It is very, very, very good. But also... I'm not 100% sure it's exactly what I'm almost thinking. It's great for messing around in the studio, but on a pedal board, you've got one or two sounds that you want, and then that's it. Also, and I'll put this out to listener, anyone who's got one, it sounds very similar a lot of the time.
it does that big ethereal thing.
It does.
But it's always a variation of that.
Yeah. And, you know, I've been playing around with the board quite a lot, and I'm like, I still think the H9 is one of the best things ever because of the variations of sounds that you've got in it.
Right.
But I've really been digging the CXM 78. And one thing I really miss, I've got a little kind of display case that was my dad's, and it had some of his stuff in it, which we boxed up, and I've now put loads of pedals in it. And I was getting all the pedals out for the display case as something nice to look at. And I plugged the Mood in and was like, to me, that is just one of the best pedals ever made, in my opinion. I just think it's so easy to use. You've got six controls. It does a bunch of funky sounds. Sometimes it does some weird stuff. Sometimes it does some not so weird stuff. The clock control, because it's synced to pitch, you know, you can kind of get these big ambient things out of it. And it kind of does what the Microcosm does to an extent in terms of that ambient ethereal sound. And I was like, you know what would probably serve me right would be something like that and then the Generation Loss. So they call the Generation Loss Mark II the VHS duplicator, and is very much based around replicating VHS tape machines, right. I guess. And that kind of failure and saturation of tape. So that is designed by a guy called Tom, and I totally forget his surname, who used to be Cooper Sounds. So Cooper Sounds did the original Generation Loss. They then did a Generation Loss in conjunction with Chase Bliss, which was like a limited edition 500 pieces reverb exclusive, sold out instantly. And then he said, oh, I'm closing Cooper Effects. And then a month later or whatever, he said, I'm actually going to go and work for Chase Bliss. And that's where the Generation Loss Mark II comes out. And that's wildly available from the direct Chase Bliss US or EU store. Full stereo in and out. So it's I think it's the first fully stereo Chase Bliss pedal, I think. True stereo in and out. And then you've basically got three different tape modes, and then you've got things like failure control and saturate control, and that sort of determines how much the tape
fails. How many artifacts you've got, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think the thing is, I've seen a lot of lo-fi pedals out on the market that effectively do, I guess, a more like delays that use BBD chips and modulation with like low clock speeds to kind of give you this warbly, crackly thing.
Right.
This feels like one that's gone a step further and is like, how do we model a videotape? How do we model how tape works in a, you know, VHS, and how do we build that into a pedal? And I just kind of like the idea of something like this sitting at the end of your chain. You've got some loops, or even, you know, putting it in a loop and then moving it around and manipulating it around, you know, your signal path in some way. So, you know, just sort of going, is this an option that I should explore? I don't know. What's your feeling on sort of ambient pedals, Joe?
On ambient pedals, I used to love them. I used to want them, you know, whenever I messed around with a guitar pedal board or Helix, I was always filling it with those sorts of pedals where you could just pluck a note and then everything else takes control. I used to love that. But I have to find more and more these days, actually what I want to do that, to provide that sort of thing, is a really good spring reverb and a really great analog delay. You know, I wonder with these big, expansive, ethereal pedals, if we can't see the wood through the trees. You know, the Space Echo does that fantastically. A DM2W coupled with a spring reverb maxed out will give you those things beautifully, and they'll sound organic and a bit less digital. So I'm finding this year I'm going full down the traditionalist path, minimizing everything I use and just wanting a few good quality vintage or vintage inspired things. So I'm almost at an anti-ethereal point at the moment, but I also think that's because those sort of pedals are so well trodden at the moment. Like the next £1,000 pedal that some company will do in the next couple of months will be another one of these pedals. You never hear them on any actual music, but I assume everyone in their bedrooms everywhere is having a great time.
I mean, you know, evident by the reverb sales listing, we know that the Microcosm is the best-selling pedal 2 years in a row. And I don't deny it's a fantastic pedal.
Yeah.
And I can really see it like in a studio situation where you're reamping and you've got a track and you've got a keyboard part and you're like, yeah, I'm going to run it through something and just give it more. But from a guitar perspective, I must admit it's not got... And I've really tried to spend a lot of time with it, and I do love it, but I'm like, I do, you know, when you have something else on your board for ages and you go, actually, I just miss what I had on there before. But you're right. I've got the CXM, granted, the most expensive reverb I think you can buy in pedal form.
Yeah.
And a, you know, a deluxe memory man, granted, the most expensive analog delay that you can buy secondhand on the market. But it does 99% of what I want. I think that really the thing that I'm missing is that kind of looper function to be able to hold something and then manipulate that. And that is what the Microcosm does allow you to do. But I just find myself not turning it on very much.
Right.
Or spending so much time dialing that sound in. I'm not using any of the other parts of the pedal board. And I kind of want something that you can step in and out a bit more. And I do feel that the mood, coupled with maybe... you know, with the generation loss, might be the way forward.
I would be really interested to see how you continue with this and whether you find yourself. I think maybe that is a better idea. A couple of pedals that do something a little bit more simple, simpler. You know, that might be the option. But
or yeah. I just find someone who listens to the podcast that works at Eventide and they just get me an H90. Yes, so I'm like, I'll just use that. But yeah, I don't know. I'm going to have a little bit more of a play around. I mean, one thing that I don't have on my board that the H9 does do, but I don't think it does as well as the individual pedal I've got on another board, is the SY200. I've got so many great synth sounds built into that.
I can't with expression argue that.
Pedal. It's just, you just can't get it. You can't get those polyphonic synth sounds from anything else.
No, there is nothing that sounds as good as the SY200. It is an absolute game changer if you want those sorts of tones. completely different conversation point to an ambience pedal, but
well, no, you put a touch of reverb on it and you know, away you go. But funny enough, I've just opened Reverb and the first thing that comes up is Hologram Electronics Microcosm. And it's up for more money than they are new. So that goes to show that probably for the third year in a row, it will probably be one of the top selling pedals on Reflip. Yeah,
almost definitely. Well, we'll see. We shall see. Anyway, it's about time. That's right. It's the question duck, dear listener. So we should just discuss what our questions are going to be. After this episode, dear listener, we're heading over to the Patreon exclusive episode, patreon.com/guitar nerds, where every week Matt and I discuss a topic or question that's been asked in the Guitar Nerds Facebook group, or you can email a question to us at info@guitarnerds.net. Or if you're a Patreon subscriber, you can ask us on there. Excuse me. I've picked a couple of questions for this week. Phil Steer is the first question. Phil Steer says, help me, fellow nerds. I'm a Gibson guy mainly. Les Pauls and SGs. But I would love a similar guitar with a trem that's not a Floyd or Bigsby. This is already, he's looking for the impossible. Anyone know of any options out there with that kind of feel? Plenty of Floyd-equipped Les Pauls and ESBs, LTs, etc. But I can't seem to find a more simple trem on anything that's that kind of shape. I have one of the Brian May models with a Wilkinson trem, and that's really great and stays in tune well. It's just not the sound or look for the stuff I play, which is heavy classic rock and metal. So that's Phil's question.
Right.
Really tricky. Don't answer it now, Matt. This
no,
is Patreon.
I was just confused, Joe.
Right.
Does he mean a Gibson guitar that has a trem?
Yes. He wants like a Strat style.
Those two.
Yeah. He so doesn't want a Floyd or a Bigsby. He basically wants a Strat style trem on a Gibson-ish, a Gibson-y guitar. You know, annoyingly, I do have you know, some options for this, but certainly he's mentioned the Brian May guitar with trem, which would have been one of the obvious ones I'd go for being a similar look or feel to a Gibson. But he says that's not a similar look or feel to a Gibson.
Well,
so
we'll come to that in the podcast then.
We shall. And the other question from Peter Peche, is almost a topic more. It's not a question. It's a topic for us to discuss. On the Facebook group, he posted a gorgeous picture of his old Dakota Red Fender Mustang with a lovely looking rosewood neck, really deep rosewood with a lovely grain line through it. Gorgeous aged parchment, perloid parchment yard on there. It looks very, very good. Anyway, he said, so I got COVID at an office party and was unable to take the day off from work. Naturally, I spent the day noodling and shopping for new guitars, thinking I need an offset jangly thing. So he spent the day watching YouTube, doing research, almost pulling the trigger on several Jazzmasters, and then it occurred to him, maybe he has a jangly offset thing. So he dusts off this old guy, meaning the Mustang, formerly his only guitar for over 30 years, and only recently knocked aside for new shiny things. Welcome back, old friend. Lesson to everyone. Go back and check on your old friends. They probably still have a lot to offer. So we'll maybe talk a bit about that sort of, you
nice.
Know. Nice. Old guitars that we forget about and the importance of remembering the things that are already in your catalogue. But yes.
Or just keep buying new stuff.
That is the obvious alternative. Yeah, I think that makes more sense to me. Certainly, I wouldn't want to do anything other than that. Anyway, it's now time for the news. Okay. Okay, this week on the news, Matt Knight, I normally ask you before the episode if there was something that you wanted to talk about especially. I assume the Way Huge is your choice.
Yeah, Way Huge is my choice because I like Way Huge. I like the way they are huge. No, I like the way they look. I like the feel. I like George Tripp's behind them. I think he's a great engineer. I think they've come up with some great stuff. And this new pedal from them, so the Attack Vector, is a phaser and envelope, simple four controls, speed, range, feedback, sensitivity, and effectively have a phase switch and an envelope switch. So as they say, there are serious levels of funk cooped up in this yellow machine. And it just reminds me way back of the days of the first Pigtronics, the fat phaser, or the phaser they did, where you had that kidney bean phaser and you had an envelope section. Because those two effects go together so well, in my opinion.
Which two?
Phaser and envelope.
Oh, filter, right. Yes, filter envelope. Yes, yeah.
So I think, you know, I like the fact that they've got both of those in one box. So you can have filter on its own, phaser on its own, or together as one. And it's as simple as that. But I just think it sounds really good. I think the idea for me, you know, I just like those two effects together. I think it saves you having two individual ones, especially usually if you've got some sort of auto wire or envelope controlled filter. A phaser just kind of takes a little bit of the harshness out of it and gives everything a little bit of movement. I think it looks really good. It's just got real 70s vibes. Pair that with a Boss OC2 and yes, you'll be absolutely yes, rocking. And that's analog- actually one of my favorite. Sorry, Jago.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, an analog octaver is exactly the thing to couple with something like this.
Well, my favorite combination of effects on my board at the moment is an OC2, a Moog low-pass filter, and a Phase 90, which is about three times the cost of what this would cost. So for me, I think this is a real winner. I don't know if the envelope and phaser controls are maybe taken from the Atreides. Was that their other, that was their other pedal that came
Atreides,
out
maybe, yeah,
that came out a couple of years ago, maybe a year ago.
It was when everyone was naming a pedal after something to do with Dune.
Yeah, I also can't spell Atreides, and it said arteries, and it was like MXR arteries, and I'm like, no, my arteries are fine. So that was the what they call the analog weirding module. So you had volume, sensitivity, range, bright, fuzz, rate, and sub. So I think that's probably more like it did have a vocal envelope and a phase in it and a fuzz. So I wonder if they've taken a couple of the things out of that and moved it into, I guess in some ways, dare I say, a more usable pedal.
Right, yeah.
Well,
a simpler pedal, a more straight-up pedal.
A simpler pedal. But yeah, no, I'm excited for this one. I think it's good. I love to see what Way Huge do. I think the pedals they make are fantastic.
235 quid is the premium end of what you pay for modulation-type pedals, I think.
I think so. But well-built, well-designed. George Tripp's obviously a great name behind the product, so you know, could be worth a punt if you're after a phaser or an auto wire, or if you want to mix the two together. Yes. So I can't really think of a huge amount of other things on the market apart from things like the old Pigtronics, but I don't know if they're going to be the right thing for you.
No. Okay. Well, it definitely something very cool. We'll see. Let's see. These sort of pedals are so weird and specific that they're never really going to have much impact on the market because there's not that many people looking for this sort of thing.
But I bet think it's there's just good. So many pedals on the market. Full stop. You know, it's just new stuff coming out all the time, and I think you know you just gotta. Don't know. It just feels like, and now you just got to take the punt on a couple of pedals and go, do I like this or not? Easy enough to sell on somewhere like Reverb. And, you know, that's the way I kind of view it. And I think something like that, I think, you know, it's going to sound really good. It's not cheap, but it's not stupidly expensive. And, you know, could be a fun little pedal to have for a while. I mean, yeah, maybe you could buy a couple of Moore pedals if you weren't sure, but that did a similar thing. But having in one box, and I think building the circuitry together does make a bit of a difference.
Yeah, a very cool unit. Well, we'll see. Anyway, it's time to spin the wheel. We've got to do the topic of the week as well. This week decided by Sean Hughes, as he won last week's wheel spin. Before we get into that, let's spin the wheel and find out who's going to get the option next week. Dear listener, if this is the first episode you're listening to in this series, the DDO is each week Matt and I are going to spin a wheel with all the names of our top tier Patreon backers. One name will be selected each week. And that person will get a lovely gift bag, a Guitar Nerds gift bag, lovely tote bag, and gets to choose a topic for us to discuss in the following week's podcast. Here's the spinning the wheel jingle whilst I spin the actual wheel and we get a name. There it is, dear listener. The wheel has been spun. The name has been selected. And it is, for next week, Derek Rich. Derek Rich, I will be in contact with you, and you get to choose what Matt and I are going to talk about next week. Last week, Sean Hughes chose the topic. Incredibly similar to last week's topic that we had. Who was Chris Franklin had it last week on episode 3. So very similar again about bass. But here it is. He says so last week we were just talking about a bass amp a bass rig set up for Chris Franklin as he was moving on to bass. Sean Hughes slightly different. Here's Sean's question. He said, actually, I converted from guitar to bass about 10 months ago to play in a local classic rock band, and I could use any tips you could give me on setting up for gigs. We've only been practicing once a week, but I haven't played any shows yet with the current lineup. Me specifically, having never played live ever. So any tips you could give me on setting up on stage would be great. Right now, I'm running into my Helix LT, then out into the power amp input of an old Ampeg SVT 200T head, then out into a 410 and a 115 cab. I already owned the Helix when I switched to bass, so I figured why not use it. I guess I'd really like to get your opinion on stage setup and what you prefer when playing live. So, Matt, this is kind of a bit of a general one as well. It's talking about setup, like things, how to set up for live as well.
Yeah. So, effectively, only using the Ampeg for on-stage volume, really, because if you're running into the power amp in, you're bypassing the preamp, aren't you, the Ampeg. So, the Helix LT is going to do everything for you,
I'm going to put this out there. So before we move any further, Sean Hughes, that is an absolutely batshit crazy rig. You have something as good as an SVT 200T, and you're using a goddamn digital Helix.
Yeah, I mean,
use the SVT.
Yeah, I mean, I was funny enough. I know that's not necessarily the question, but it just depends. I don't know what music he's playing, but I would say that. Really, you probably just want to go Helix LT straight into the PA. It depends. I mean, if he's doing something really effects laden, then he's saying, he's a classic? Yeah, I mean, classic rock. I'd just go straight into the guitar, TU3, some sort of drive pedal straight into the SVT for me. And if you've got loads of stuff on the LT that you want, then ditch the Ampeg in some ways and just go live straight into a PA. But in terms of setting up, if he's never played live before, I don't know, Joe, you've played a lot more gigs than I have. What's your general routine?
I think there is a route to getting the best out of both of these setups, and it is using the Ampeg SVT 200T plugged straight into the front end of it and just not using any of the amp sims off of the LT. Then you still have access to that full effects things. And the great thing about an LT, great compressors on there. So some light compression in front of your bass is always going to make a bass sound better.
some really good drives. The fact that any of the drives you can essentially blend in with your clean signal, which tends to be, you know, really advantageous. Certainly, I think things like the Klon clone on the Helix LT is very good. You blend a little bit of that in, you know, against your SVT's warm, clean, punchy signal, you'll get a lovely sort of rock and roll sound there. I mean, I think a 410 and a 15 is quite a lot. I mean, it depends what, you know, what sort of venues you're playing, I guess. But I'm sure the 410 on its own would be fine. You could save yourself a little work. But we'll see. You know, everyone likes a stack behind them. And who am I to argue against that?
Yeah, I just, yeah, I, if you want some trouser flapping, I guess, as it were,
yeah,
you kind of want to have the Ampeg. But I guess, yeah, if just setting up, I mean, the best thing is, if you're going to go and set up live, is just practice the setup itself, like practice dialing in the sounds, not only just like in a room with yourself, but making sure the mix is there with the band, and just be confident. I think a lot of it for me is just confidence in your gear and confidence you know what you're doing. So even if you've Absolutely. Never played a gig, it's just knowing, it's like practicing for an exam. It's like going there and being confident enough to say to the sound guy, whoever, yeah, this is what I'm using, this is how I've plugged in, plug it all in, have your sounds dialed up. I think you might panic more if you're, as you say, Joe, in some ways relying on the LT to do everything.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I,
you know, and I'm just thinking, like, if you're just using it for effects, yeah, turn everything off, have your preset set it so you don't go further than that. But yeah, I mean, that is a crazy bass rig, and fair play. You know what, if I was playing more gigs, I'd probably take two amps and a giant pedal board, because I've got the stuff and I should use it. But I think, yeah, for me, it's about not just practicing the music, but how you're setting things up, how you're taking it to a gig, and just having a bit more of that confidence to get it all set up.
Yeah, that is a big thing for me. There are always things that seem obvious, and I'm almost partially reluctant to talk about them on here because they sound almost amateur in the way I say them. But they're things that bother me and stress me out, and I have to get right in order to play live. And Matt, I spoke to you about this before. Like, I changed my pedal board recently because I had a lovely pedal board, but it was fitted tight to my pedals, so I couldn't get my cables into the pedal board, which means carrying something separate for cables. And actually, that really messed up my getting on and off stage time and bringing things on and being able to do it quickly and being able to pack down and get off quickly as well. It was oddly problematic, even though that's such a basic thing. So there are little things like this. You might think you have the best plectrum. If you're a pick player, you might think you have the best plectrum in the world. I promise you, playing live with a plectrum is a different thing because so many plectrums are gloss. Like, so many people use gravity picks, and then I'm like, do you use these live? They are gloss. They're a gloss finish. They are going to slip out of your hands as soon as you start sweating. There are so many things like that, like plectrums that I see that I'm like, this is clearly for someone who plays at home. Because the only plectrums I've ever been able to keep hold of live are the Ernie Ball Everlast ones, because they've got like a powder coat on them. And there are lots of, I'm not claiming that Ernie Ball are the only ones that do that, but powder coat plectrums, something that's got some roughness on there, that it matters so much more than the brand or how thick your pick is. Having a plectrum that you're not going to drop, that's actually the most important thing. So, I don't know, stuff like that. Cable length, make sure you're using cables that you're comfortable with, and that can go either way, is too short or too long, especially if you've never played live before. It might not be something you've thought about, but I don't know what the things are. Are they 20 footers? Is that the normal one?
Like 18.6 is the one that we said. After that, you start to get a bit more of effective cable capacitance.
Yeah, that's what you need. That's the length you need. Anything shorter than that is going to be too short. Anything longer than that, you're going to get tangled up in. And, you know, curly cables, I'm a big fan of a curly cable. It's very cool, but practice with it because it's going to get in your way. You know, so there are little things like that. And I think there are a bucket of, you know, live tips that you will only find because they will be specific to you, but just work out the things that stress you out and upset you when you're getting on and off stage and fix them. And I promise you, so many of them will be the opposite of, you know, what you do when you're playing at home.
Yeah, I think, you just got to practice everything else as well as the music. That's the thing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, there we go. So, I guess I hope, Sean, that answers your question. Derek Rich, we'll look forward to yours next week. We are coming to the end of this podcast. Once again, our show and tells keep getting shoved right at the end of each episode, Matt. So we'll shoehorn this one in before we head over to the Patreon to answer a couple of questions and talk about a couple of other things. But this week, Matt, I've been playing the new Orange effects pedals, which came out last year. Yeah, they're so good. Do you remember the huge oversized boxes? And I love a pedal that doesn't care about being, real estate, pedalboard real estate friendly. They're unassuming, big, huge size, massive. They're tall and they're big and square. And even though they only have a couple of controls on them and probably only a couple of capacitor things inside them, it's great. Love it. They released a sustain pedal, which is kind of a compressor. And they released a distortion, two-control distortion with just a level and depth. And they released a phaser, just one control. It's a phase 90. It's that sort of thing. They're all very, very good. They're very proper. They're very analog. They're very old school. They're the old Orange pedals. They're reissues of that. And they're supposed to have that proper old earthy sound. And even though they're not in the model of having 20 controls on the front of a pedal, they're not designed to be, they're not designed to be all singing and dancing. They're not designed to do everything. They just sound great at what they do. The very simple thing that they do, they sound very good at doing. So I made a little song using all three, using the sustain pedal for just a few held notes, using a coupling of the sustain and the distortion for the lead part, and using the phaser for picked chords underneath. And I thought they were all great.
I have to say, Joe, that if they had announced and debuted those pedals with that track, I think it would be a very different I think there'd be some different conversations out there. I don't think there was any bad conversations, but I think a lot of people went, as you said, they're big, they're bulky, they're very vintage, they're very retro, but the proof is in the sound. And I thought that track sounded really good, Joe. So another 10 out of 10 for me. Very impressed. And I thought the phaser sounded great. Did have that real kind of vintage like phaser sound to it, which I thought was, it's kind of thick and warm, but it's got a big sweep to it. I thought it was great.
I really like the phaser. But then I really like phase 90s. I will say that my only downside with the phaser was, does it have enough identity to separate itself from a phase 90 when it is approximately £200 more expensive than a phase 90?
Yeah.
So there's a bigger price difference between them. But it is very, very good. I really liked it. I think sort of stylistically, I'd probably pop it on my board instead of a phase 90 just because of that.
But no, I I think you sold me on the phaser, Joe. Thought it sounded great.
Thank you very much. Okay, wonderful. Well, dear listener, that does bring us to the end of this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds. If you'd like to get in touch with us to ask a question or for any reason at all, if you have a company you think we should be checking out, or even if you are a company or a brand or a luthier or whatever, do reach out. We reply to all our mail, info@guitarnerds.net. DM us on Instagram. Ask in the open forum on Facebook group, the Guitar Nerds group. If you're a Patreon supporter, contact us through the Patreon. We're heading over to Patreon to talk about this week's question of the week. Join us there. Visit patreon.com/guitarnerds for all the info on how to sign up to support our charming community, which you can do for as little as $1 a month. Well, thank you for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Goodbye.
Well, once again, it is that time for me to say thank you so much to all of our top tier Patreon supporters. Without you, this podcast is not possible. You are my heart's true desire. So thank you very much to Scott Guitars, to Suresh, Dorsonic Pickups, Chris Franklin, Anton Fryant, Barry Gresbick, Steve Davis, Daniel Walker, Jorin Brown, John Conaway, The Studio Rats, Russell Healing, Yogi the Guitarist, Ty Allen, Kyle Harris, Sean Hughes, Brian Hansen, Andy Hoffler, Eric Hemmer, Jeffrey Wax, Brian Einsler, Gavin van der Linden, Mark Hizau Kadawaki, Stuart Robson, Eric File, Peter Peche, Andy Manley, Simon Milbourne, Joe Puttick, Blake Wyland, Phil Radomski, Dave Lee, Ross Edwards, Jason Wharton, James Dorr, Jake Gray, Derek Rich, Scott Kennedy, Steve Merkel, Abe Matthews, Christopher Losef, Stephen Burke, Robin Smith, Kytopia the Band, JD Short, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Paul Corrigan, Rob Nordvik, Scott O'Brien, and finally, with his leg so broken, so in pieces that if I so much as say his name, it may cause it to jiggle and pain will ensue. Moog. Grab it.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.